What's going on with dance and stuff? What's happening with dance and things? What's going on? What's happening? What's going on with dance and stuff?
Wink. Wow, I am so gooped by that clip.
What clip?
From the Housewives.
Oh, the Cunningham clip.
What is going on? And is that new? I don't know.
You know what? That's the Real Housewives of Beverly Hills. And I feel like that one... what's her name?
Sutton.
I'm going to ask my Cunningham friends, but I feel like I've heard about her. Like, I feel like in the past someone's been like, oh, and one of the housewives used to, you know, work at the Cunningham studio or whatever.
For our listeners, Paige Lapari from Orchestrata sent us this clip from the Housewives where Sutton is getting ready to go on a trip
to Spain. Somewhere. She's going to Spain.
And she's like, I'm sorry, I'm not bringing you on this trip. She's talking to someone.
To her stylist.
And an assistant. Some tragic assistant.
Yeah, very tragic, stylist. Yeah.
And he's like, I don't know. I mean, and then she's like, well, I'm bringing whoever.
Makeup.
And he's like, oh, yeah, because glam. Uh-huh. And then, I mean, these people who assist these people and, like, what they have to perform.
Totally. So sad.
It's insane.
So sad.
And then she's like, and then I'm also bringing Merce.
And it's like...
And I'm like...
Weird, what? Weird moment. And I'm thinking Merce is a cat, you know?
Right. Is, yeah, or like a pillow.
Yeah.
Could be anything.
Vibrator.
exactly. And it turns out that it's Merce Cunningham ashes. Who even knows?
She has a little baggie of Merce Cunningham ashes, and I'm like, wait. Look, anything's possible. What? Maybe she was like a close assistant or something and got to get a few tablespoons of ashes. But I suspect
it's something like something else got burned down to ashes. But then also this clip does not reveal what happens.
Not yet.
So, but Merce is going to Spain.
Some of Merce is going to Spain to get sprinkled somewhere. Merce's dying wishes to travel with that Real Housewives of Beverly Hills. To be sprinkled in Spain.
Finally, Merce is famous. Mainstream.
Merce is?
This is the most famous moment
of Merce's life. Mainstream famous. They had to do basically infographic about Merce Cunningham to explain who he is.
Is the Cunningham Trust up in arms about
this?
Those are our ashes.
They're like, that's our image and our ashes.
You can't say Merce.
I'm like, this is the best thing that ever happened to you.
Crazy. Oh, amazing.
Dance.
Mainstream
dance. Well, there's a number of things that we can talk about today.
What would you like to talk about?
Well,
I have a list.
Okay, there's the Oscar nominations.
Okay.
There's
I don't really care.
There's
but...
NIAID. There's yes, True Detective.
Right. That's right.
What else? What's else?
There's
what else?
All of Us Strangers.
Oh my goodness.
And there's this cookbook called Tender Heart that I want to talk about.
Okay, great. Where do you want to start?
Let's talk about All of Us Strangers.
Okay, sure.
So I kind of want to hear your take, even though I already have, because you did tell me what this movie was about before I saw it.
Right.
But I had a vague, you know, spoiler alert, you know,
yeah.
that he's dead,
yeah.
or, you know, whatever, that yeah. there's some, you know, whatever. But, I do kind of feel like the way that the movie is filmed does kind of, from the beginning, locate it all in the imaginary.
Okay, well, that's because I told you.
I think that is in part because they told you, but it's also because he's a writer.
Uh-huh.
So it's like, uh-huh. oh, we're, you know, outside of his house.
Right.
So then there is sort of this sense that you're going into the story that he's writing.
Right.
But you're also not, I mean, the genius of it is that it never really...
tells you.
Confirms anything.
But yeah. I do have to say that when a few days had passed and someone pointed out to me a correction in my perceived timeline, the movie suddenly made a lot more sense and made me less upset.
Okay. And what was that correction?
Well, I thought that everything with Paul was happening until, you know, the conversation at the end where his corpse is in the bed. Uh-huh. But then someone was like, no, the corpse is old and has been there since after their first meeting, and everything in between with Paul is imagined. It's like an imagined relationship with this, like, uh-huh. very
I don't even know that the corpse is not imagined.
Incredible.
You know, I think the corpse is also imagined, because why is the door unlocked? He just goes in. Like, interesting. I don't think he doesn't know this person. I think it's all, like, a projected, like, there's a relationship between this question of the parents and what his life is. Mm. And I think that imagining of the this, like, sexual, you know, relationship, romantic relationship, is the product of, like, what did my relationship with my parents leave me with?
I see, yeah.
And part of it is, like, you know, we can also, like, project that maybe, like, this, he never even met this, that this person doesn't that there's no reality here, that there's no, like, concrete place.
Yeah.
Even from the beginning. We could, you know, we don't know exactly, because it is all experienced in, like, the first person.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting because I want to honor my initial experience of this film, which is that I was highly
frustration.
I was very bothered by this kind of second half of the movie where, like, it seems that mental illness, like, really starts driving the narrative for everybody. And I was like, wait. What is grounding us here? And I felt by the end of the movie, I was just like, I feel nothing. I'm upset. I want to go. That was how I felt. I was like, I'm not even sad. Paul's dead. You know, I was just sort of like, what? And that they went into the stars. I was like, this is cheap. And so I was upset, but then I've been thinking about it, you know, and I think that is a testament to, like, something effective. Is that if you leave and you, like, keep working on it, it's like something happened.
Yeah. I thought I had a lot of feelings during this movie. I thought there were just incredible, complicated confrontations.
Yes.
And it doesn't bother me that those are all sort of, I think, located internally. Those are just, like, projected conversations or imagined or whatever. Mm-hmm. So for me, there's a moment where Pedro Pascal and Paul Mezcal.
Yeah, just call him Paul.
So hard. He's reading Walden.
Okay.
And I think that is the clue to the whole movie.
That he's not real.
Not necessarily that dynamic, but essentially what the movie is about.
Okay, well, you'll have to explain that to me.
Okay, so I pulled this quote from Walden.
Oh my god, you have really done research.
Well, I mean, I have long been obsessed with Walden. So, you know, so seeing him reading this book, I was like, wow, okay. Now my whole entire reading of this movie is sort of clarified. Mm. So this is Thoreau in Walden. He says, you know, he's, in theory, living in the woods. He says, men frequently say to me, I should think you would feel lonesome down there and want to be nearer to folks. rainy and snowy days and nights especially. I am tempted to reply to such. This whole earth which we inhabit is but a point in space. How far apart, think you, dwell the two most distant inhabitants of yonder star?
Wow.
The breadth of whose disc cannot be appreciated by our instruments. Why should I feel lonely? Is not our planet in the Milky Way?
Wow.
This, which you put, seems to me not to be the most important question. What sort of space is that which separates a man from his fellows and makes him solitary? I have found that no exertion of the legs can bring two minds much nearer to one another. Mm. What do we want most to dwell near to? Not to many men, surely. The depot, the post office, the bar room, the meeting house, the schoolhouse, the grocery, Beacon Hill, or the Five Points, where men most congregate, but to the perennial source of our life, whence in all our experience we have found that to issue, as the willow stands near the water and sends out its roots in that direction. This will vary with different natures, but this is the place where a wise man will dig his cellar.
Wow.
So this, in relationship to that ending,
yeah,
like, is not our planet in the Milky Way.
Yeah. Well,
this, like, positioning these spirits in the
in the
sky, yeah, the stars. And,
well, what a beautiful passage I take away from that, and that he's a flat earther because he called it a disc. So that's crazy. No, that's beautiful, and that makes a lot of sense, that Andrew Hay would probably kind of build everything from there.
Yeah, it does feel like this question of, like, loneliness and, you know, I've seen people talk about this thing of, like, this building where only two people are living, which is, I think, A of all, a thing.
But
buildings get
perhaps
built.
Perhaps unlikely.
Absolutely unlikely that, like, you know, the romance, the, you know, whatever.
Right.
But I think it does, you know, the point of the movie is the poetry of,
right,
these relationships.
It's a fairy tale.
Yeah.
Interesting.
I mean, incredible. Like, the beginning is so dreamy and, like, wandering.
Mm.
And the Jamie Bell moment of, like, cruising in the woods was so disorienting.
Mm.
That, like, it turns out it's his father who's, like, slightly younger than him. And in that leather jacket, it's just,
yeah,
like, whoa.
Well, that was, well, I mean, yeah, very effective. I have to say, like, I was really invested for that whole period of time of this, like, introduction to the parents and the... I thought that Claire Foy and Jamie Bell gave, like, really great performances. I was very...
I think the better performances.
Oh, yes.
I would say.
Because I have to say, by the end of the movie, I was like, cut it out, Andrew Scott, please.
Andrew's, like, real theater.
He was giving such a broad performance by the end of this movie that I was like, what happened to the beginning of this film? And that's why, I think that's also
some...
why I got pushed away from this movie, was by him.
Yeah. There's, like, some one-man show that they did some time ago. There's clips on YouTube.
Yeah.
And it's like, oh, God.
Yeah.
Theater.
Yeah. Look, I think he was really well-directed in Fleabag, and I think that he was less well-directed in this film. And I still think he's a
good... Fleabag is also, like, a kind of more theatrical... presentation.
Yeah.
This, and he talks about, like, really trying to do this movie, and I'm like, well, it didn't really work.
Well, he's really trying.
But
let me tell you,
it is good. I would say it's good enough.
Yeah. No, it has beautiful moments, and I think, I'm telling you, first 50%, I'm like, great, no complaints.
Wait, so where does it turn for you?
When he really starts to descend into confusion.
Oh, when it's like, everyone's in the bed, the parents turn into the boyfriend. It's like,
right. And even before that, when just like everything becomes like so urgent, he's bringing Paul out to the house and being like, do you see my parents?
Right.
And it's just like, wait, prior to this, it seemed as if you understood what was going on. And now you don't. Like, you are now completely unmoored. And maybe that is the, that is one of the versions of this plot. But
yeah,
I just didn't like it. I didn't want to see people act like that. I don't like that.
I hear that. I see that.
Yeah, I don't like when his face gets so dramatic and he's just like trying to cry so hard. And I'm like, just let it happen. I'm like, look at the performance your parents are giving.
Yeah, yeah.
Like that conversation in the kitchen with Claire Foy, I'm like,
incredible.
So good. Beautifully written.
But even more than that is the conversation with the father.
Yeah.
For me. That, like, why didn't you come in?
Why didn't you come in?
If you heard me crying.
Yeah, that's hard.
Oh, because I think I knew I'd be your belief. It's like, yeah, that's the tea. And you know what? He knew that that would be the case, and that's why you never knew each other.
Yeah. Oh, see,
it could, know me.
See, it could have been that, but then it had to end with a corpse.
Yeah, it's true. It's true. It's actually, if the kind of Waldenness thing is the point, then, I mean, it's interesting because it, this is based on, oh, that's what the, okay, this is based
here
on a book.
We go.
That was turned into a movie by the same director who made the that crazy house movie, which I think is I think it's a Japanese director.
Oh.
I think the book is Japanese.
And it, wait. The book is by the same person who directed the house movie?
No, oh, I think the person who made the...
The book.
This is like a remake. There's another movie of this book,
I believe.
But that was directed by the...
Which is, like a horror movie or something?
House is a horror movie, and I suspect...
Well, that's where I got lost.
I don't know what the book of this is.
Because,
you know, that's why I'm curious.
Totally, like, this was not a horror movie until suddenly it was. And you're like, what?
Yeah. And I think maybe that's... Yeah, I'd be curious to know more about the book. And I should watch it. Because I was actually trying to figure... I was like, some movie was made by the guy who made the house movie. I was trying to figure out what it was. That was the revelation.
Look, I'm like,
it was this
go
movie.
Off and like mix up genres and disorient the audience. You did it. It was effective. I was disoriented for sure. So
what I really appreciated about this movie is that it felt idiosyncratic and poetic, like a unique poetic creation.
Yes, I agree. And I had a bad time.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I also had a good time. I also had a good time.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know what you went into it thinking it was going to be.
I had an exact idea of what I thought it was going to be. I was like, I knew he was going to go visit his parents.
Right.
An imagined version of them. And he was going to have some catharsis. I knew that it was going to be in conjunction with getting to know Paul Mescal and watching like how their relationship evolves through these conversations with the parents. End of story. That's what I thought. I just did not expect the like drug trips and the like insanity and the horror through the reflections in the glass and then the corpse. The corpse is when I was the bed sore pink corpse is when I was like, are you kidding?
Yeah, it is strange. I don't know about that. I don't know really why that was, because then they still end up like together in this other way. Like,
yeah.
So
that's why I really think that they did meet once, which is when Paul was just so blackout drunk, and he did the right thing by not letting him in. And that was the only that was the only time they ever met.
Here's the thing with that. He could have been a little more caring in that moment.
Tell me how.
Not like just closing the door.
Well, I would
have been like,
I'd want to shut the door on someone that drunk.
Yeah, but I think there's a way of closing a door that isn't, that, you know, maybe leaves a window open.
I see. Oh, I see. Or like, hey, why don't we be in touch tomorrow?
Yeah, at the same time, I would absolutely just close the door.
Definitely. Because
the only thing you know about this person is that they are a drunk. But he's really hot.
Yeah, so, I mean, that is the, that's,
it's crazy.
That's the part where you kind of understand that he sort of, like, re-engages. You're like, he's so beautiful, and he lives in your building.
easy peasy.
Yeah.
Also, like, you could just move if things go south.
Right.
No one else wants to live in this building.
And also, the whole plot device of the smell, I was like, come on. Like, we've just, like,
right.
I was like, it's, why make it so gross at the end? But anyway.
Yeah, unclear.
Yeah.
I'd be curious to read this book, yeah, actually, and see this other movie.
Okay. All of Us Strangers.
So that's that.
That was a nice conversation. Thanks.
Really recommend it.
Thanks for that passage from the book.
Well, Walden.
Walden.
So I ended up listening to an abridged audiobook version of it, and that I think part of that passage was in it, so I was like, Soleil, this explains that whole end insanity that I'm not sure, I don't know what your reading of it was.
My reading?
Are you still there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Of the, like, now they're laying in bed together and, like, we're just gonna shoot them into the sky.
Well, I guess my reading of it was like, this is the end of Andrew's like psychotic episode, and then perhaps he'll wake up in the morning and be like, "Whoa, I'm in a dead person's apartment." But he needed to have that final scene with Paul to have some closure on this whole kind of escapade. But again, mm-hmm, very open to interpretation.
Yeah. Yeah, I think it's where, like, it's not like a normal plot, and to sort of, it's, we're not really supposed to arrive at some conclusion.
Mm-hmm.
So it makes as much sense as any other,
right,
ending would.
I mean, it's interesting. I mean, I'm very pro directors trying things, especially when they're given, like, suddenly a bigger platform, because, mm-hmm, he did a very beautiful and kind of conventional thing with Weekend, and then also,
yeah,
with Looking, kind of, but then,
uh-huh,
this is a departure.
And there,
sure,
are some other movies, and I don't know.
We don't know.
About
we
them,
don't know
but,
them.
I thought this was, like, a really tricky, it's tricky to keep something as ambiguous as this is. It's sort of like this dreaminess without it feeling just vague.
Yeah. I agree. Okay. What's next?
What's next?
Jodie Foster Film Festival?
Jodie Foster. Yeah.
Okay, well, episode one of True Detective, Slay. Episode,
yeah,
two of True Detective, No Mama.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
Was so, like, episode one, I was like, this is incredible. This research facility, and, like, I was like, this is amazing with the darkness and this, like, beautiful landscapes, and,
mm-hmm,
like, and then episode two, I was like, okay, now we're just going to have to, like, learn about these sad people's lives. I'm like, no.
Interesting.
Where's the magic again? I want to see ghosts in the desert tundra, you know?
This is reminding me of, I watched Society of the Snow.
What's that?
This is a movie that's on Netflix that's nominated for Best Foreign Film,
okay,
Academy Award for, I don't know, somewhere in South America. And it's about this plane, that was like chartered.
Yes. It's Alive. It's actually like
football players or something.
Actual story of Alive.
Yes.
Yes.
Yes. That's right. It is the same,
right,
story.
But, like,
as that
now
movie.
It's not centering, like, a white soccer team.
White people.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And it's made by the same director that made Impossible or The Impossible.
Oh, wow.
Whatever that
really
movie's called.
Really fun
movie. Which is so incredible.
Really good.
Wow.
Really, a feat.
And it's similar, where you're like, ay, 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 ay.
How'd they do that?
To the point where I skipped through the middle half of this movie because I thought, I can't.
Too painful.
I can't be here like this.
No.
With these people.
No.
So I missed the whole cannibal part of the movie.
Good.
Not
sometimes
sad,
it's just best to not put yourself through that.
Yeah. So that reminded me of, I think, what you're feeling, where it's like, I don't want to just be in the sad winter daylightless space.
Well, I mean, I do want to be there, but I need something to happen, right?
Uh-huh.
Like, this past episode where it was just like, where does the swirl come from? And then this guy, Clark, who, like, is not in the jumble of bodies. And you're like,
uh-huh.
Well,
uh-huh.
We never got to know him, so, like, that doesn't mean anything to me, you know? And then they're like,
okay.
The way that the one of the actresses is like, well, that means he's out there, alive. And I was like, we know that.
Well, this is the same person who has that insane trailer and was in a relationship with the woman who died, right? That's my understanding.
She was in a relationship with a woman who died?
You know, this unsolved murder.
Yes, yes. Who is the
you
woman?
Know, so
yes.
So I think the feeling is like, oh yeah, this person is obviously like
haunted,
the killer. I'm really into it. I think getting those bodies out of the snow and like
love that.
Putting them in that hockey rink or whatever,
yeah.
The ice rink.
Look,
and
I love all the kind of like gruesome bits, except I don't like gross horror stuff, but this is not that.
No, this isn't that. And I liked the, like, getting more backstory, the Jodie Foster character, like, sleeping around and, like, stealing husbands.
She's the,
being, like, a bad person.
She's the town harlot.
Interesting.
Who knew?
And how, you know, she's, like, been kind of, like, sent here. Seemingly as, like, punishment.
Right.
By that other guy.
And so she's going to punish him. Sexually.
Yeah. So it's...
Sexually.
Well, and by, like, taking on this case, which does seem absolutely insane.
Completely inappropriate.
Without calling in.
Absolutely
any help.
The craziest thing for, like, a small town police department to take
yeah.
care of. Oh! Very mysteriously, 6 people are naked and murdered. Why don't we just
found in like a
in the
like,
middle of a frozen lake or whatever,
sculpted into like
yeah.
a horror
why don't,
art position.
Why don't we try
incredible.
To figure this? And then she's like talking to this like 20 year old assistant detective, being like, what kind of questions would we ask about this? And he's like, they seemed afraid. You're like, what?
Yeah, I think it's fun. I'm enjoying it still.
Okay. I'm
going
to go on.
I'm curious how sort of like supernatural the scenario is. And I was trying to remember the first season. I feel like there was like thick kind of spiritual things.
I see.
You know, but I think, and like that Matthew McConaughey character was so crazy seeming. So I think that seems to be true, but there is like the ghosts, at least this one ghost who comes and visits Fiona Shaw, who I think is incredible, and like always is.
Who?
Fiona Shaw.
Oh yeah,
old woman.
Yeah, we got that ghost. That was episode one.
Yeah. So, I don't know.
I don't know. We'll see. I mean, I'm gonna keep going. Like, I like how it looks. I like being in Alaska for.
And it's women.
It is women,
there's
for
so
sure.
So many women.
Yeah.
That's
yeah.
really helpful.
I had a women thing I wanted to kind of...
Great.
had a women thing. I wanted to make a correction, kind of. Which is that a couple weeks ago, we were like, what if what if Lena Dunham had directed Barbie?
Uh-huh.
And I just want to say, there's lots of space for Greta Gerwig and Lena Dunham. We need a lot more women directors. Mm. And Greta Gerwig has done good things. And actually, I think...
Which one?
Well, I think Greta Gerwig's initial...
I know you like that
initial
movie.
Well, I love Little Women. But I think Greta Gerwig's initial films were very like what Lena Dunham was doing. Her film, like, So-and-So Takes the Stairs. What was that movie called? There was a name. Like, Caroline Takes the Stairs. But it's not Caroline. It's a different name. But that was one of Greta Gerwig's early films that she directed in...
Caroline Takes the Stairs?
No, okay, we're finding out right now. We're finding out right now. Okay, wait. I'm finding out.
Okay, I think there's another issue with the Barbie specifically of like woman
Hannah. How about that? It's called Hannah Takes the Stairs, and then Lena Dunham called her character.
How is that the title of a movie?
It's from 2007, and it's a very good film, and I think you should watch it.
Okay. So I have always thought that Noah Baumbach was like a hateful kind of director. Not that I. But in a way that I've like, these movies are not for me, and that's okay. Mm. Like, I think that there's, like, a quality to them that, like, is so infuriating to me. Mm. But I'm like, well, that's something. That's something, and it's fine. There's something in, like, that dynamic in this movie that's also frustrating.
Well,
but anyway,
I have to say,
why wasn't Greta Gerwig nominated for Academy Award? Because Barbie's a bad movie.
I agree. However, in that case, do not nominate Ryan Gosling. I think it's like, it's unfortunate.
Well, is that just because men are not, like, who else?
Don't nominate him. There's got to be other performances.
By fame, you have to be famous.
Yeah.
First of all. And
give Coleman Domingo a second nomination for Color Purple. I have to say, very under-nominated, The Color Purple. I'm so grateful Danielle Brooks got a nomination, but I'm like, give Fantasia Barrino a nomination.
Is that Best Actress?
Yes.
Yeah.
Wait, okay, now I want to go to the Academy Award list because I want to complain a little bit. I want to complain a little bit.
Okay. Well, we're there.
Oh, okay, but I don't have the list pulled up.
I didn't really pay attention because it is absurd.
Okay, Oscar nominees.
But I did the Ryan Gosling thing I did here, you know, where I'm like, yeah, that's absolutely not to be nominated for. It's insane.
Okay, wait, here are our Best Actor nominees. Okay, you ready?
I'm ready.
Paul Giamatti, didn't see it.
For The Holdovers.
But I'd like to see it. Okay?
Yeah.
Bradley Cooper for Maestro. We knew that was going to happen. It's a crazy...
I actually don't think that's like...
No.
Yeah.
It's a crazy performance.
It's a... Yeah.
Coleman Domingo for Rustin, which is a movie I've not seen.
Rustin?
I don't know about this movie.
I don't either.
Okay. Cillian Murphy for Oppenheimer. Now let me tell you what.
The terrible movie.
There was a camera really close to his face for about 5,000 hours, so I'm sure he worked hard. Jeffrey Wright for American Fiction, another movie that I plan to see shortly.
I'm going to go see that tonight, I think.
Oh, good, okay. Okay, now here's the 10. I wish they wouldn't nominate 10 films. I don't know why. I think it's just, like, crazy. Okay, we have The Holdovers, we have American Fiction, we have The Zone of Interest, we have Barbie, Oppenheimer, Poor Things, Past Lives, Anatomy of a Fall, Maestro, and Killers of the Flower Moon. Now, which of those movies is actually a good movie in your estimation?
I think Zone of Interest, which I haven't seen, is a great movie.
It's a great movie. I can tell you, it's a great movie.
I think Killers of the Flower Moon is a worthy
movie. I did not manage to get that one in this week. You liked Maestro.
I thought Maestro was a very solid movie.
Yeah. Anatomy of a Fall you didn't like.
Yeah, absolutely is not.
You didn't see Past Lives yet, did you?
No, I did not.
I'd like you to watch
it. It looks like a nice movie.
It's It's very thoughtful.
Yes, it looks like a nice, thoughtful movie.
And I was...
Certainly better than a Barbie. Oh, here.
I was incredibly moved by Past Lives, probably more so than by any of these other films.
I think... I expect American Fiction to not be Oscar-worthy.
No.
Nor is The Holdovers. Poor Things is tremendous.
It's hard work. I think
Beau is Afraid actually should have been nominated for Best Picture.
Yes, and Best Direction because it's just, like, so visionary. But, again...
And certainly, like, every, like... I think Poor Things and Beau is Afraid are, like, production.
Yes.
Like, every kind of, like, thing.
Yeah, but I don't want to watch it. No. But, yes, good job. I, unfortunately, did see Beau is Afraid.
Was it even nominated for anything?
Well, I think one thing. Yeah, maybe production stuff, sound or something. Okay, Barbie, no.
Barbie, no, for basically
anything. Maybe production design. Except,
you know, that song or whatever.
Oh, yeah, I like that song. But production design, costumes, song, period. Oppenheimer, look... It was hard work, and it's a lot of performances and a lot of editing and, like...
So much footage.
So much, yeah.
So.
There you go.
That's insane. I think Barbie got Oppenheimer nominated for things, basically.
I think Oppenheimer... Oppenheimer got Barbie nominated for things, is what I think.
There you go. It's a collab.
Yeah, Zone of Interest.
Maybe they can share.
Of all these films, like... I for me, of these 10 films, I would pick Zone of Interest or Past Lives for Best Picture, which obviously won't happen. I've not yet seen The Holdovers, but we'll wait and see. And I may not watch Killers of the Flower Moon, but never know.
Yeah, I don't think it's... I don't know.
Okay, let's go on to actress. That's fun.
Okay.
Emma Stone, Lily Gladstone for Flower Moon, Annette Bening for Naiad, which we haven't talked about, Carey Mulligan for Maestro, and Sandra Hüller for Anatomy of a Fall. Now, after having seen Naiad, I would not be in any way upset if she won an Academy Award for this performance, because it is, the physical performance is unbelievable.
But I don't think the movie is enough.
No, but Annette Bening does some kind of physical acting that is so astonishing that you're like,
it's crazy.
Give her an award. Because what she goes through... I couldn't believe what I was watching. And then at the end, when they show the footage of the real stuff, and it's just exactly, exactly like what you're seeing with the, like, fucking destroyed skin and swollen lips and, like, loss of body control, I was like, this is real. Like, this woman is truly so insane. She's...
What's that Tom Hanks movie with Wilson?
Cap...
It's like that.
What's it called? Alone?
Singular.
Yeah, I'm on an island and I'm... No one knows where I am.
Lost.
It is like Castaway. There we go.
Castaway.
It is like that. It's like a total transformation, like complete commitment to, like, the physicality of an idea. Mm-hmm. And that Annette Bening... Wait, I have to also say, my biggest kind of gag with Naiad is that Diana Naiad agreed, A of all, to let this movie be made and have the depiction of her be so horrible. Because
it's true.
She is, like,
it's quite negative.
There's very few redeeming qualities about this person. She is a horrible bitch. She's mean to everybody.
Narcissist.
Complete narcissist. Yeah. She's complete absolutely. She's so mean to everyone around her. She's a user, and she's insane. And, like, I guess that is the way that she's able to do these things, but. Look, I mad respect for doing this, but also so confusing.
She also might, you know, I think it also could be a thing of, like, during that time, that is what it took, like, complete, like, selfish determination.
Yeah,
and you see it in, like, the younger version,
too. Yeah.
But then there's, like, you know, 40 years in between, where she's operating probably in a very different way.
I really appreciated that they just used archival footage and weren't like, this is Annette Bening, and then we just cut mm-hmm. to Annette Bening, and I was like, I still believe it. I was like, I didn't need you to...
I thought that was really incredible,
yeah, too. I was like, I didn't need you to do face replacement or, like, reenactments. I was like, this is perfectly fine. I was like, mm-hmm. I'm on board. And Annette Bening gives, like, such a convincing performance that I was like, yeah. I mean, yep. Jodie Foster also, I'm like, what a great friend performance. I was like, Jodie Foster...
Absolutely.
Also, like, when I'm Jodie Foster's age, I want to look that hot. I'm like, you're so cute.
Yeah. One feels like she has a really nice life.
Yeah, she's got great calves, I think. Wow.
Yeah, that's what I mean.
Yeah. The premise of this movie, or the premise of Diana Nyad's life, is something I did not think about ever in my life. So no. I was gagged and gooped to see
yeah.
a person be like, I want to swim for 3 days. And you're like, what?
I just got to do this thing.
I want to swim through the night. I want to swim till I'm hallucinating.
But you have that, you know, you have that downtown dance cult that you're in.
It's
not so far away.
That's true.
You're pretty devoted.
But, and also, I will say, like, I thought about her a lot last night because I went to a Stud Country dance line dance event, which is, we don't, you know, they're California-based, but they come every so often. But it was a five-hour dance event from, like, 8 p.m. to 1 in the morning. And
wow.
I danced pretty much the whole time. And by the end, I was like, this is Diana Nyad vibes. Like,
your face was all puckered.
And... I literally, my body was, like, humming with confusion. I mm-hmm. was, like, I don't know if I can walk to the train. I was confused. You know, my toenails started to feel so crazy. It was crazy. I was like, this is, like, one of those, like, all-night dance marathons from the 50s or 40s or whenever those happened.
That's so fun.
Yeah, so I was happy to have had those things happen back to back, to watch Nyad and then do that thing, because I was like, I'm going to push myself like Diana.
Yes,
you
did it.
I also was very moved by the Bill Nighy, if that's how you say his name, performance. I thought he was very effective, great actor. He was the captain of the boat, Jeremy.
Right, dies of cancer.
Well, we didn't see him die, but he's gonna die.
Well, you get the end credits.
Right.
It says that.
I know.
But we know.
And he dies the year that she managed to do it. And when Jodie Foster hugs him, it's just like, felt really good. I was like, this is a good mm-hmm. movie. And it's nice that Annette Bening's in the water not talking for a lot of it. Because you're like, stop being so awful to everybody.
That's right.
Yeah.
You go over there.
And I loved, loved, loved when she just, like, completely lost control of her body when the sun came up and they could see Florida. And everyone mm-hmm. on the boat was like, just put one arm mm-hmm. in front of the other. And then Jodie Foster jumped in the water.
Gets in there.
And she, aww. I know, and she's like, don't touch me. Because she's like...
But then the way the suspense, even, like, to her walking on the beach is so insane.
Insane. I started crying.
It's incredible.
I was like, oh my God. Like, is she
going to
make those,
really...
like, last four steps?
Nobody touch her.
Don't touch her. I thought that was an amazing rule about this whole thing. Mm-hmm. It's like, you cannot touch the boat. You cannot be supported. You have to put on the wetsuit, like, unsupported. Uh-huh. That really horrifying goggle mask. It just was mm-hmm. so grotesque.
Absurd.
Watching her take off the goggle mask and her whole face is ruined. It's just
yeah.
incredible. Anyways.
Yeah, that jellyfish.
Anyway, oh my God, getting stung by the jellyfish and having her be like, I want to keep going.
mm-hmm.
Anyways, highly recommend the film. Watch the film.
I know,
film.
It's a real surprise. I think it's a real surprise that the movie works at all.
Yeah. Love the fantasy of her. So hilarious of her being like,
The Taj Mahal
being like, it's
yellow brick road.
It's more beautiful than I ever thought. And then she does.
Yeah.
She gets to swim down the yellow brick road and over the Taj Mahal. It's beautiful.
Yeah.
Anyways, enjoy Naiad.
It's on Netflix, I believe. It's
absolutely Netflix. Okay, so now we've covered... Oh, we're still on the Oscars. We just had to divert for Annette Bening.
Yeah, I mean, I wish that Jonathan Glazer would have been an Academy Award for directing. That'd be appropriate.
Right. Well, okay,
I can't imagine that Christopher
Nolan... But in reality... That stupid movie. In reality, who... What actress person will win? I mean, they might give it to Emma Stone, but she already has one.
I would expect Lily Gladstone to win.
Okay, that'll be great. I haven't seen it. I want to see it. We'll see.
I think she's incredible, and I think politically it makes sense. And
right. She is surrounded by blinding whiteness.
Yeah. Truly.
Okay, next cut.
And I don't think any of the other performances are so... I mean, I honestly would, like... I'm surprised that Natalie Portman isn't in there. I think that May December is one of her best performances.
I'm looking at this list of directors, and it does feel like they threw in Justine Triet for Anatomy of a Fall to be like, she's a woman, but I'm also like... Yeah, but a woman also directed Past Lives, which is a superior film. Uh-huh. I'm like, this category could have had more women, but it also could have had more men, because they could have also included the Ari Aster. But it seems like
that's right.
The Academy hates him, don't they?
Well, Ari has not made like a kind of down the center lane kind of movie.
Yeah.
I mean, not that... I mean, Yorgos with The Favourite was pretty successful in that, but it was like, you know, a kind of queen big movie, mm-hmm. even though it was strange.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Martin Scorsese, of course... And Christopher Nolan with this thing that's, like, kind of a given in terms of, like, Hollywood.
Hollywood.
Jonathan Glazer is, like, a surprise.
Yeah.
We
all have our fingers crossed for Jonathan because of body of work and this excellent film.
Yeah. I could have, you know, I would have dreamed of, like, a Todd Haynes nomination. Would have been great.
Yeah, why didn't? I mean, but, I guess there's five slots. Wait, is May December, like, not nominated? Wait, how are Julianne Moore nor Natalie Portman nominated? That is so crazy.
That's what I'm saying.
I forgot about that movie. Wow, that is a shutout. That's really weird. I guess because it was, like, comedy category at the Golden Globes.
Yeah, I don't know.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Well, the Zone of Interest is in the international feature film category, which I think is so weird.
Certainly will win that. Why?
I don't know.
Is it not, like, in German?
I mean, it is. It is.
Yeah, actually,
wow,
where's Jonathan Glazer
from? I did not know Wim Wenders still made films. I feel like...
I know, I just saw that and I thought...
I feel like Jonathan Glazer is English, yeah. Okay, best original song, it'll go to Billie Eilish again. Okay.
Wow, Jodie Foster is nominated. That is insane to me. That is not correct.
Wait, she's nominated for supporting actress?
Yes.
I liked it.
Yeah, it's a nice, fine performance.
Yeah, they should have nominated...
It's an Academy Award.
They should have nominated Taraji P. Henson for The Color Purple. I don't understand.
Well, hopefully Danielle Brooks will win, and then
Think the woman from The Holdovers will win, because she already won the Golden Globe. She already beat Danielle Brooks at the Golden Globes.
I haven't seen that movie, and I don't know about it. So
yeah, but I just am assuming, just based on the past. Okay, wait. Supporting actor: Ryan Gosling, Sterling Brown, Robert Downey Jr., Robert De Niro, Mark Ruffalo. I can see them giving it to Mark Ruffalo.
I think Mark Ruffalo's performance is top notch.
It's really fun.
I think, Emma Stone didn't make much of an impression on me on that movie. I think she does a great job.
I just got really, really shocked by America Ferrera being nominated for Barbie.
Well, she had that speech.
She is the most mediocre television actress. I am shocked. I'm shocked.
It is that
Margot Robbie. I'm sorry, Margot Robbie's not nominated. Okay, look, say what you will about Barbie, but she is in it the whole time. She is Barbie, and she America. No. Danielle Brooks, incredible. Divine Joy Randolph, haven't seen it, but I can't wait to see that performance. Emily Blunt, absolutely no. I mean, she's good in Oppenheimer.
I actually really liked her. Yeah, I thought she's good. I know you didn't love it, but I did feel like she had a standout
performance
in that movie that I didn't like.
And she has to be a person at many, many ages of life, and that's interesting. Jodie Foster, I liked it. Okay, best original score. I don't know.
I don't want to do this anymore.
You're bored.
What else? Talk about. Yeah, it's just also absurd.
I know. Nothing makes sense. Nothing makes sense. What are we talking about?
There's the Jerome Robbins, what have you, on Friday, which is today. This comes out.
I'll be there all day.
But the symposium is also live streamed or whatever on February 2nd.
Oh.
I guess that's the following Friday.
Interesting.
So you can watch it online.
Well, I'm going to go for the breakfast, and then I'm going to be there. I'm going to learn about Martha Graham, and then and then I'm going to the ballet that night. I'm going to New York City Ballet.
Wow, a Lincoln Center
festival. It's a Lincoln festival. Center kind of day. And I'm going line dancing tonight again, but just the regular kind, the 2-hour kind. Marathon. Not the 5-hour kind. And
it's great.
Okay. We sent the Illinois show off to Chicago, so if you're in the Midwest, Chicago area.
Yeah, go. It opens
Chicago Shakespeare Theater. I don't know
this weekend?
No.
Or something?
I don't know, actually. But soon. So get your tickets and go, if you're in Chicago Shakespeare, go see it, please support my career. Not that I'm not getting a percentage, but if the people are obsessed with the show and it goes to Broadway or whatever, look, no one's counting on anything, but you know, drum up interest in the show.
Yeah, music is incredible.
Absolutely. The performers are giving like really, what was the word I thought of? I saw a run through the other day. And they are, like, really, really... They're dropping into these characters, and they're, like, sobbing through the show. I was like, wow, when did this start? I was like, this is really interesting. So, yes, go see some really dropped-in dance acting performances at Illinois.
It's now Illinois, and it'll be at the Armory in March.
Indeed. Indeed-y-do. What else can I tell you?
Okay, so Tender Heart.
I don't know.
Is a cookbook by Hedy McKinney.
Hedy Slimane.
The author of To Asia with Love, which is a book cover that I've seen a lot.
Just thought of like what a Hedy Slimane cookbook would be, and it would just be like a picture of a cigarette and a picture of like a martini, and that would be the end of the book.
Heaven.
And then a pair of like incredibly thin pants for the last page to be like, you see?
I knew it.
Okay.
It's a vegetarian cookbook. It's a book about vegetables. So it's organized chapters on by vegetable.
Okay.
So it's like broccoli, it's like eggplant. And I am obsessed with this cookbook.
Tender Heart.
And I think it's because it's organized that way where there's like, I think it really helps to think about, like, oh, these are recipes centered around this ingredient.
Well, yeah, especially if you're like, this is a thing that's available. What can I do with it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's, like, how I cook. Yeah. Because Paige had recommended this other book by this author when I was looking for a vegetarian cookbook years ago, and it was called Family. And I just looked at it, because I never cooked from it. It just, like, didn't work for me. And I was looking through it, and I was like, I think every recipe just feels, like, too much to, like, approach. And I think there's something about organizing the book in this way that is really comforting.
Mm.
Where you're like, okay, when I have broccoli, then, or like I can buy fennel and then I'll figure out a recipe from this book.
Mm.
And it is all very Asian inspired, which I love. And you know, there's like eggplant brownies.
Oh.
I'm excited to make, I've made a bunch of things from this already and they have all been very clear and direct and absolutely delicious.
Eggplant brownies.
There's gorgeous desserts. There's some no churn ice cream that I'm gonna make.
Have you seen videos of this, of the Ninja Creamy?
Ninja Creamy?
Yeah.
No.
It's this machine that the Ninja Company put out that, like, I guess, like, the, it's a kind of machine that restaurants have been using, or, like, molecular gastronomy-type places have been using, and now they've, like, figured out a way to make something with a motor this crazy available to the home. Yeah. Okay, I'm gonna try to explain this. Okay. So imagine you took the can, it's like an ice cream canister, like a metal thing, and or plastic, I don't know, and you you freeze anything in it, right? You you can put some milk and bananas.
Does Carla Lolly Music have this?
Yes.
Uh-huh.
And then you freeze it.
I think it was on her like holiday list.
You freeze it solid, like a rock.
Uh-huh.
And then you hook it into the machine, and the blade of this machine is above, and it works its way down and into the container through the ice, and it spins, just shaving, 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 down, 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 and then it turns basically this block of ice into like the most finely shaved creamed dessert, and like sometimes it comes out being kind of like snowy, but then you just put it through one more time and it literally turns into ice cream. It like becomes the kind of more or less the crystal structure of ice cream. So basically it eliminates the necessity for churning at a cold temperature, and you can just turn a block of ice into ice cream. And I guess the really interesting thing about it is that without the element of cream, you can still make things feel incredibly creamy, like pineapple juice, you know? So,
wow.
So it's,
that is
pretty
thrilling,
pretty special. And I've watched several videos of it, people being like skeptical and then being like, this is actually really good.
That is amazing.
It's insanely loud is one thing I've also learned.
Sure. I mean, anything like churning through a block of ice.
And it's definitely not a machine that I want in my house or could fit in my house.
Right.
And I also don't care about ice cream that much.
Oh, that's crazy.
You love it.
Yeah. This recipe is fennel and black pepper.
Ice cream?
Ice cream.
Mm.
Yeah. I got it from the library first because I have felt a little burned by some cookbooks. So I was like, I'm just going to get this and check it out. And I was like, wow, every recipe is like a real thrill.
Wow, I love that.
And it's vegetarian, which is like my goal for this year. So it feels, I think it's because they feel really rich. What did I make last night? This carrot, like braised carrots. It's very Moroccan, which I adore.
I love carrot. I love cooked carrots.
Okay, the weird thing with this recipe is that it called for what are described as baby carrots. But in the photo, it looked like normal carrots.
That are small.
I absolutely could not believe that, like, she would be encouraging, you know, American baby carrots. So
no,
I did not
use
them.
No, no, no.
And I think consequently, they were not soft, which the I think was the intention in the recipe, but also didn't matter because they were tremendously delicious. Olive oil braised carrots and chickpeas.
Yummy.
Heaven.
Yummy.
There's a lot left over.
Is this person findable on YouTube to get a gander at them doing their thing?
They're not really like a personality in that way.
I see.
But the writing in the book is very beautiful about like growing up in Australia from Chinese immigrants, and like her father worked in a market and would bring home like all these vegetables, and it's very beautiful. The music says, a cookbook about vegetables and unbreakable family bonds. Because her father died when she was quite young.
Oh.
So there's like a grief strain in the book as well. It's very beautiful.
Is Claire taking a break from YouTube? Where
I feel like everyone's taking a break from YouTube.
Yeah, I'm like, everyone, excuse me. I need help.
But that's okay. I think January's for reading books and sleeping and stuff.
That's true. That's true.
We also like to watch videos.
Yeah, we also need to watch videos. But I guess Claire is releasing her Patreon content. I'm learning to embroider. I got suddenly very obsessed with all these like embroidery videos on Instagram, and I was like, wow, this is so crazy. And so then I went to Blick and got all these supplies because I was walking past it, and now I have two embroidery hoops going at once in my house, and I'm trying out the stitches and making leaves and flowers and stuff.
Learn everything and then teach me, please.
I will. It's really nice. And is a thing I guess I've attempted in the past but never really done it properly, so now I'm really going back to basics.
I have as well.
Because, anyways. Oh! Because I went to this talk at the Whitney that Nick Mouse and Angela Miller have this book coming out about Pajama, the Paul Cadmus and Jared French and Margaret French.
Uh-huh, right, the trio.
Yes. And so they have a book coming out about it, and I went to a talk at the Whitney that they were giving, and it was fine. And I know it was, look, it was like a bit dry.
It's fine. We're like an hour in. You can say whatever you want.
No, it was a little dry at times for something that you think is going to be like so saucy, but
you know what I think of the Whitney as being rather dry.
Well, the whole like visual arts discourse does veer in that direction.
Snooze.
Yeah. But,
yeah.
Look, these, Angela Miller made a point I thought was really interesting at some point in the conversation, when this whole notion of these people living kind of polyamorous, non-conforming lives amongst each other in, you know, the 40s, and the kind of like radical nature of that. And she was like, but for people with this kind of education and in this like echelon of culture, it's not that radical. Like this was a privilege afforded to like these kind of people.
Yeah.
Like, because the question came up of like, why do we see no other kinds of people in these images? Like everybody looks like white and fit and, you know, like
rich,
and that is why like these people were afforded the privilege
for sure
of being able to like live this atypical way because they could go like pay to be out on Fire Island or in P-Town or wherever for, you know, the whole summer.
And they didn't have to do anything.
They didn't have to. But what's interesting about these people is they made these practices, and they're substantial, and a lot of it was like in relationship to George Platt lines and the images that were taken in and around their whole this triad's their relationship whole. Their whole but one of the most like exciting things in this talk was in the slideshow. They suddenly like went past these two remarkable images that were George Platt lines needle points. And they were needle points of, I think, Paul Cadmus images. And they're really incredible.
Interesting.
And then in the discussion around these needle points, like this whole idea of, you know, queerness and the queer body had already been remarked on so much during the talk. And then they showed this photograph of like a naked young man rolling around on the floor with his butt up between the two needle points. Like literally these two needle points are just on the floor of this room on either like diagonals of.
Oh, interesting.
And then,
I see.
And then there's like the naked boy in the middle.
Mm-hmm.
And after, like, that image came up on the screen, Angela Miller took a pause and she goes, well, that's queer. And I was like, yeah, I mean, the audience erupted into laughter. It was like the moment of comedy for this group of gay people listening to this lecture. Because it really is...
Needlepoint.
It is the queerest image one can imagine. But at any rate, interesting talk I did. Wow. I learned.
I bet it's on YouTube, actually. Probably. They tend to record and post those kinds of things.
Yeah.
So.
If you're interested in that work, like, by all means, look at it. And there's also a gallery at the Whitney that has a bunch of their artworks on display. Anyways, was my moment of
There's
culture.
A little show about this stuff.
Yeah, one of the floors. I think the seventh floor.
Great. Oh, I also just looked at your meatball. That meatball was just Bon Appetit recipe.
Yeah.
Not New York Times at all. I did look for it on New York Times. Oh. And did not find it for some reason.
I don't think I ever said that.
Because it's on Bon Appetit.
Bon Appetit.
Yeah, makes a lot of sense. I think it's great. And I have been thinking about making it.
Yeah. And I want to give you one tip, which is that I've made these meatballs twice. And what I learned from the first and the second time is that mm-hmm. it says there's this unusual thing in the recipe, which is to use half a grated onion. And I think they specify like a medium onion. Now, it's complicated. But they do then give a kind of approximate quantity, which is like a quarter cup or something. I would abide...
Ounces, please.
But also abide that quantity. Like, you can exceed a quarter cup a little bit, but don't exceed it a lot. Because I think the first time I made them, I exceeded that quantity a lot. And it made them a little more difficult to manage. They still came out beautifully, but the second time I was like, now this is a ball, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That makes sense.
Whereas the first time they were kind of like cylinder tuffets. But, yeah, if you want a proper ball, not too much raw onion.
Well, when you're making meatballs, I think what you want are balls.
You want balls? You want balls?
Otherwise, you're just making a... meat sauce.
Oh, I saw someone want to say, my hair people, the people who cut my hair at the Hoishi Coop, I've been getting my hair cut there for years, and then they left, and they sent me a...
It's over.
They sent me a text message. They said, we're gone, doll. Figure it out. And I thought, oh my god. So I've just been dreading getting a haircut for a while.
Do you think it was like a cult, and they all...
No, I heard actually that the woman who owns the Hoishi Coop just wanted to go back to Japan and not be here anymore. And I'm like,
but
absolutely.
Where are all those people? You know?
Out of work.
One of the, they should have been like, come on over to my house, I'll cut your hair in my bathroom.
That's true. I do know that some of them have gone on to other salons, but anyways, I went and saw my friend Sam at his gallery at Klaus von Nixhagen Gallery yesterday. And then he had also, his boyfriend had been getting his hair at the Hoishi Coop. Anyway, it was a long story. So then on my walk home, I was just feeling so kind of like agitated by this hair situation and asking everyone where they get their hair cut and how much does it cost. And then I was like, you know what? There's this barbershop across the street from my house. And I looked in the window and the guy looked out at me and no one was in there. And I walked in and I said, do you do walk-ins? He said, yes. And I said, how much is it? He said, $50. And I said, I will get my hair cut. And so I sat down and I just sort of explained what I wanted. And in literally 15 minutes, I walked out of that barbershop with a totally decent haircut.
Bald.
No.
Bald.
No.
Great.
Completely decent. And I was like,
great.
Wow. No need to be afraid. Look, yes, sometimes be afraid.
Well,
don't go into Astor Place.
Yeah, and generally be afraid. Maybe next time it won't be the same.
That's true.
And that's okay.
It's sometimes that
but
doesn't.
Like,
yeah.
It is hard.
It is so scary.
Reliability is the key.
I've got some bad haircuts at the Hoishi Coop, so like no one's perfect. But so nice to get such a quick haircut and have it not be terrifying.
Yes. Well, no, they're not doing any of the like pretend stuff that's unnecessary.
Oh, they did nothing. Literally nothing. They sprayed it with some water and literally just started hacking at it. And I was like, I guess that's how they do it here. I mean, there was no like clipping up the top layers. There was none of that. No, it was just like chop, chop, chop.
So yeah, I think longer term, your hair might get crazy.
I don't care. My hair always looks crazy, so it's kind of fine.
No.
You don't think so?
Mm-mm, I think you have very beautiful hair.
That's really, really nice.
But that was dependent on you going to that place. So I don't know what's going
to
happen
now. Stop. I did have to... I had to cut a few pieces of it when I got back to the house that were just sort of like...
Yeah.
Oh, that piece is really
that's
long.
That's to be expected.
Yeah.
Especially if it's a 15-minute.
15-minute. I love that. I like to just get in and out of there. I don't want to sit there in anxiety for 40 minutes or 50 minutes.
No. Oh, my God, no.
No, my God.
When's
your birthday?
All right.
May?
My birthday's in April.
Oh, April. Jack's birthday is coming right up.
In February.
Wow, February 1, right?
That's right.
Are you doing anything special?
I'm having a little dinner.
Oh, I guess I wasn't invited.
Well, you want to come up? You're certainly welcome to. It's just a bit of a ask, I would say.
Well, I'll let you know.
It's just some neighbors.
Oh, that's nice.
But yeah.
Are you going to make a cake?
I think it's a Thursday.
Are you?
I don't know. I mean, Jack is in such a, like, peculiar food scenario.
Well, you know if you put a cake in front of Jack, they'll eat it.
Absolutely. Well, I was going to make this ice cream.
Oh. Well...
There's also, you know, there's a ginger and coconut mochi cake.
Oh.
There's an upside down rhubarb and ginger olive oil
that
cake.
That sounds,
there's
well, there's no.
A tofu pudding with ginger syrup.
There's no rhubarb right now.
I know. It's in the recipe.
But honestly,
like,
if you.
No, in those 10 minutes when there's rhubarb, you should make this.
If you want to make a festive cake for a party.
Ginger and date sticky rye pudding.
Oh, that sounds good.
Looks incredible.
Wait, that sounds like a Natasha Pickowitz recipe.
That's
if you want to make a festive, very, like, conventional-looking birthday cake that's actually very easy, very delicious, make the Claire Saffis chocolate cake from the New York Times. It's delicious, and it's very cute.
Okay.
And it's,
I don't think I will.
It's an oil cake, so it comes together easily. You're not going to do it.
I'm not looking for a traditional, normal
You
want to
make ginger yuzu rye.
Something interesting.
You want to go spend $15 on a bag of grain, and I respect that.
No. Well, I mean, I don't know.
It's complicated. It's complicated.
It's crazy.
I
got a $22 head of radicchio.
Oh, no. No, accidentally. That's not right.
It was not right, but it was correct, but it was wrong.
Was that the actual price?
I was like, that is insane.
No, was that the price?
That's what the receipt said.
They made a mistake.
I think they didn't.
No.
But I hope
did
they
you
did.
Buy it at that cheese fancy place with the $25 cherry
no,
tomatoes?
No, I didn't. No. This was somewhere else.
Oh, goodness.
Where I've never shopped before, so I didn't, you know, I just was like, $100, that seems right. The stuff.
Whoops.
And then I was like, what is this? $22?
Right.
Can I return radicchio? So I haven't eaten it yet. It needs to be.
Well,
I insist that it be delicious.
Can't wait to hear back about this magic radicchio. I hope it lives up to its price.
Me too. I can't imagine that it can.
No, nothing can. That's absolutely crazy.
It's like $1 a leaf.
More than. It's so crazy.
It's fairly large. I will say it is a large radicchio. It's at least like probably like a it's a unique varietal. They have these absolutely gorgeous pink lettuces. Wow. It was it's a place.
Wow.
But this was insane.
Wow. Wow.
So I you know, when things are priced by the pound, it's sort of like I don't know how much this thing weighs.
Do you think that we could get an award
like
for, like, the most meandering, kind of boring podcast on television? I mean, this is next level.
Yeah, with a Razzie?
Yeah, we should get a Razzie for, like, the most determined boring podcast.
No, we are the least determined podcast.
I don't think that... Well, maybe that's true. And that's part of the charm.
I mean... It's the only way this can happen every week, is by being absolutely aimless.
I have a great time every time, and it's for us, Jeremy.
Yeah.
It's journaling, it's a relationship, it's a mentorship.
It's a party.
It's a full party every week here on What Kind of Leaves Did You Eat This Week, you know?
I mean, that's the important stuff.
Yeah.
Which leaves? How much did they cost?
$22.
All right.
And that's enough.
We're going to watch American Fiction this week.
I want to watch American Fiction, and I might pull it together to watch the Flower Moon movie. Okay. Oh, and I want to watch the Holdovers. Okay, I'm doing it all.
I will be seeing The Zone of Interest in a week from Friday.
Oh, that's so...
So it won't be again for another two podcasts.
Okay. Well, I saw it 500. I saw it on my birthday, as let us remember. 11:30 in the morning on my birthday. Classic. Classic thing to do is watch a Holocaust movie on your birthday. First thing.
I closed my eyes during the preview of it.
Oh, wow. That's beautiful that you care that much.
I'm not fucking around here.
You're really not. Okay, no spoilers. Don't send Jeremy screenshots. Okay, we loves you. Hey. We have to go.
We have to go, but we do loves you.
Bye.
Goodbye.